Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harris, and it's my privilege to serve as anchor of this program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved, and the host and founder of the program is the great Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she is a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's jump right into this program as Carol Marx interviews Swoozie Kurtz. Swoozie Kurtz is a multiple Tony, Emmy, Obie, and Drama Desk Award winner and a Broadway icon whose work includes big screen blockbusters like Liar, Liar, The World According to Garp, and Dangerous Liaisons. She's written a new memoir. It's titled Part Swan, Part Goose, an uncommon memoir of womanhood, work, and family, published by Perigee Paperback, Penguin Random House.
Swoozie Kurtz, the warmest of welcomes to A Touch of Grey.
Thank you so much, Carol. I'm happy to be here.
Your memoir is so touching because it's such a loving tribute to your parents, who you feel are responsible for who you are today, as well as what you've been able to achieve. So let's talk first about your remarkable father. Can you tell us about his achievements, both as an Olympic athlete and a World War II hero?
Well, he loved flying and he loved diving, so obviously, the man was not afraid of heights. He became the most decorated Air Force pilot of World War II. And he was, incidentally, on three Olympic diving teams. So he was a real overachiever, an amazing guy.
You were named after your father's plane, the Swoozie. Mm-hmm. What made it so special that a model of it sits in the Smithsonian? And doesn't the title of your book have something to do with that OB-17D flying fortress that he flew?
Yes, indeed. Well, my father flew a number of missions in that for over the years during the war and after the war in the Swoos, which was a kind of a cobbled-together B-17 made up of, you know, parts from other planes, part original parts. And there was a crazy sort of novelty song going around at the time, which Doris Day sang and Bob Hope sang, called Half Swan, Half Goose, Alexander is a Swoos. And it was about this funny-looking hybrid bird. And so my parents somehow thought that this was an appropriate name for a baby. I, of course, would have loved to have been named Sally or Mary or Jane. You know, when you're a kid, you just desperately want to blend in and not be different. But I'm pretty happy with it now. It's unique, stands out. People mispronounce it, but they remember it.
Absolutely. And there's some wonderful pictures I've got to add in the book of you in front of the plane and your parents. And, it was very touching.
I love those pictures in the book, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful pictures. And, of course, your mother, in her own way, was just as remarkable as your father. What made you say in your memoir that she was a model wartime bride?
Well, she was. She supported my dad 150% in everything he did. I mean, she literally devoted her life to him. You know, they met at USC, she fell in love, and that was it. She found her identity, and that was her path. They were such a great team because he was very goal-oriented, she was the one who had the great people skills, and together, I mean, they just were a great, great team. Two, you know, real icons of the greatest generation. I didn't realize this until I was fully grown, that I had grown up with these two amazing icons who really, you know, were the picture on the back of her book, My Rival the Sky, they look like movie stars, you know, and they did. I didn't realize that when I was just, you know, with them every day as a kid. They were just Margot and Frankie to me because that's what I called them.
And
they were off, when I was little, they were off doing war bond tours, and I was staying with my grandma the first couple of years of my life, and they would come back on and off, but I think she would always talk about, oh, Margot and Frank. So when I met them, I called them Margot and Frankie.
That is funny. Now, you talked about the book that your mother wrote because she was a writer, among other things. And as you said, it's called My Rival the Sky. and it was all about her love affair with your father and his being at war, not knowing whether he was going to come home at all. Why did you want to include excerpts from your mother's book in your book? Because I thought the excerpts were excellent.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad. I felt her book is so beautifully written and so extraordinary. I really wanted to sort of show, okay, where was she at age 20 in her life, and where was I at age 20? And these two very strong but very different women who made very different life choices along the way that really worked for them, for both of us, respectively. But they were very, very different. As I say, my mom, you know, my dad was her life. And for me, I followed more in my father's footsteps, really. Very goal-oriented, very career-oriented, not looking to the left or the right, you know. Not realizing that people are what it's all about, which my mom already knew. But really, very, very different choices. I want to say, you know, where was she at 30? What was she in her life? Where was I at 30, kind of thing? I don't do it really literally in the book, but you get the sense of you know, the kind of parallel tracks.
Absolutely. And talking about your father, whom you say that, you know, part of you is a lot like he was, you discovered, because you write, you know, what a kind and gentle man, and you discovered later on that he had really had a horrible childhood. So that's so amazing that he was able to turn that around, because most people that go through things, bad things in their childhood, turn out to be mean.
Yes, and continue the cycle. He ran away from home when he was, I think it was 12 or 9 or something, and he had these two different stepfathers who beat him with a belt and God only knows what else. You know, we never really found out a lot of details of my dad's, you know, young life. He left and he was out of there, and he knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to become a diver, and you know, he just, it was a hard scrabble existence for him for so many years on his own, and he made it. So I think when he met my mom, she was the perfect person for him, and taught him to be able to trust and relax and know that he was loved.
And that's such a big, big thing to learn, and so many people, unfortunately, don't learn that.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to talk about your career as an actor, because it's been a wonderful one, and it certainly hasn't been easy in a way when you were growing up, because you were a military brat and you kept moving from place to place and school mm-hmm. to school in the middle of the year. So why in the world do you say that kind of transient lifestyle was great training for your acting career?
Oh, it was the perfect boot camp for life as an actor, because, you know, you're constantly thrown into one group of strangers after the other. And when that job is over, you're plucked out and you're thrown back on your own devices if you're unemployed, which is mostly the case. Or then when you get the next job, you're then, you know, thrust into yet another group of strangers and you have to adapt. And my childhood was really great training for that, because as you say, I would be dropped in the middle of the school year. It always seemed like it was the middle of the school year for me, in some strange school, in some strange town I'd never been in. And, you know, as a kid, it's so hard. I mean, I'm so glad I'm not a child anymore. It's so hard. And I was so painfully shy and an only child. So, you know, I didn't have brothers or sisters going with me, being also the new kid. And I was always the new kid, and with the funny name, and it just compounded. The whole thing was just so painful.
But it turned out, as you said, to be great, great training. And
yes.
Talking about your career, when you were working in the TV series Sisters, which was filmed in Los Angeles, and you were offered in 1994 the chance to work in a TV movie one Christmas with Katharine Hepburn for a month in North Carolina. How did your dad magically arrange for you to be able to act on both sets in the same week? What a remarkable thing.
Oh, I know. I always felt about him that he could make the impossible possible. You know, he was like like in Good Will Hunting, the guy who goes in and sees the problem on the blackboard in the schoolroom and doesn't know that it can't be solved, so he goes ahead and solves it. My dad was always like that. You know, people would say to him, well, we've never done that before. And so that would be his challenge to do it for the first time. So two production companies were trying to work it out, the Sisters production and the Katharine Hepburn movie, and they were, you know, across the country from each other, as you say. So I went to him, and I said, Frankie, how do I do this? I can't go on commercial jets. I mean, they're not going to leave and arrive at the same time. I can't control it. He went to his friend Clay Lacey, who owns this small plane company, big company, small planes, in L.A., and he said, how do I, you know, can you help me out here? So I took my salary, my entire salary from the Katharine Hepburn project, and just that went toward my flights. So I would have, you know, I'd be on the Sisters set in Burbank all day long, like, you know, a 15-hour day or whatever, and then that little plane would be waiting for me at the Burbank airport, and I would take off and go to North Carolina and arrive in the morning there, and they would take me directly to the set of the Katharine Hepburn movie and start putting on my hair and makeup. And, you know, I would stay there maybe a couple of days, and then I'd fly back after a day of work there, fly back to L.A. and be on the Sisters set. It was exhausting, but exhilarating.
Yes, I was going to say, just reading about it was exhausting, but you got the wonderful, wonderful chance to act with Katharine Hepburn in the last scene she performed on film. And during that, I don't know if it was during the scene or something that she said to you, but she said something that was so beautiful about life and what she wished. Yes. How can you ever forget what she said?
I can never forget. It was indeed her last moment in the last film she ever did. And the two of us had this scene together. It was in that scene. And I'm her niece. I was playing her niece. And she says, I've had a life of no regrets. And that's what I wish for you, my dear, a life of no regrets. And they did her coverage first. It was a very intimate scene between the two of them. They did her coverage first. And then, you know, they turned the camera around on me, and she was off camera feeding the lines to me. And we were just about to shoot, and they're just finishing up the tweaks of lighting. And she said, she called over the director of photography. She said, just a moment, there's a shadow on her face. And that just took my breath away, that Katharine Hepburn was concerned that my lighting wasn't good.
That's Woozy Kurtz in conversation with Carol Marks on A Touch of Grey. And we're going to continue this conversation momentarily when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Let's get back to that very interesting conversation conducted by Carol Marks with actress Woozy Kurtz, talking about her new memoir titled Part Swan, Part Goose, an uncommon memoir of womanhood, work, and family, published by Perigee Paperback, Penguin Random House.
Now, in your personal life, you become a caregiver for the woman whose heart you are truly bonded to, your mother. And I guess she's going to be 100 in the fall.
She's going to be 100 in September. And she's, you know, just been my best pal, along with my dad, my whole life. And always, always been there for me. I mean, we're just joined at the heart. And she lives with me, my choice, in my home in L.A. And I've been caring for her for about 8 years now. And she has dementia. She's pretty good shape for almost 100, I must say. Kind of a poetic dementia. It's not terrible. Complete short-term memory loss and a bad knee. You know, like, but who among us doesn't have a bad knee?
That's right. At least one. Many of us have,
you know, and it's certainly, things have declined here and there over the past year, understandably. But, she's still certain glimpses of the original Margot come through every so often out of the fog. And she still calls me Susie and says, I love you, darling. And
you know, you write that on top of all the wonderful gifts that your mother gave you, you know, self-confidence and optimistic view about life, that she gave you that part of yourself you never believed you could be, a caregiver and a nurturer. And you say that you've now become the mother, and then you go on to say, lucky me. So isn't it hard, though, to stay ahead of, you know, what is going on and your mother's increasing needs, because you're still navigating a very busy showbiz career?
Oh, Carol, it's so hard. You get it completely. It's a real balancing act, very precarious balancing act, because staying ahead of her needs, I mean, around my house in L.A. with the caregivers, these wonderful caregivers that I'm so fortunate to be able to have, because most people have to do it alone, you know, it's like NASCAR around my house. It's like when the car pulls over to the side of the road, okay, you change the tires, I'll look under the hood, quick, we got to get him back. It's just, we are master improvisers, because you have to think so fast, then you have to think on your feet. Like, wait a minute, what? She can't really tell us what's bothering her. I mean, she can talk, but it's like a kind of like a child or an animal. They can't really express, oh, my back is hurting, or oh, I have a pain here. You just know that something's wrong. And she's a very, very strong woman, but you know, she so needs me now. I mean, the tables have completely turned, and I'm the mommy now, and she calls me mommy sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah. It's dicey. It's a very, very tricky thing, because I find myself, I am the mother now, and, you know, I can handle it on the days that I feel strong and rested, but what's really hard, and I'm sure all parents can relate to this, is that when I'm not up to it, when I'm not up to par for some reason, I haven't had enough sleep, or I'm just feeling a little under, it's very, very hard to deal with her needs as well.
And it's so wonderful that you expressed all that in your book, because it gives great comfort to the readers of your book and our listeners. So many of them are in, you know, similar situations.
Yes.
To learn about, you know, what you're going through now. Do you have any words of advice for all the caregivers out there from your experiences?
Oh, I do. I mean, the first thing I would say is you must take care of yourself. And it's going to feel selfish or like a luxury sometimes, or you'll feel guilty, like, oh, my God, I can't take time out for my doctor's appointments and you know, my exercise and my social life, whatever. You have to, because, and I feel this is true in life in general, not just taking care of someone who's not completely, you know, up to it, is that the more you take care of yourself, the stronger you are, the happier you are inside you and healthy, you're going to be at your top game for the person you love when they need you. And I think that applies to just general everyday life. And
it does.
Right,
it does.
But it becomes really heightened when you're taking care of someone who can't take care of themselves. And I just believe that. If you just never unplug and don't recharge yourself, it's going to show in not a good way in your care for that person that you love. And they're going to know it. They're going to feel it. So that's one of the things I've learned.
Yes.
And the other is that essentially, you know, everything is going to be all right. It's really going to be all right. And you may feel like you're in the middle of monsoon season, but things will change because everything changes. And things will shift and the answer will come. I feel that very strongly. There's been, you know, one monsoon after another in my life within the past few years taking care of my mom. And you feel like you're up against a blank wall, but then something breaks and an answer comes when you just,
boy,
you know, when you just basically
you're right.
Given up.
Because your
the light
advice
comes in.
Is just right on target and so heartfelt and personal. And that is why I think readers of your book and the listeners for the show who are encountering similar situations will get so much from it. And finally, I've got to ask you about your very popular current TV show, Mike and Molly. And it's just a funny show. And you play a character. You play Molly's mother, Joyce. And what do you like about the role? And what has this role allowed you to do?
Well, Joyce, I call her Juicy Joyce. She's so delicious in body and fearless and fierce. And I don't think there's a mother. I really think she just redefines the mother prototype on television. I don't think there's another mother like her. She's wildly inappropriate and has no filter. She loves her daughters so much. But she just makes me blush. I feel like I should be bleeped constantly.
You have freedom then. You know, she don't have in real life.
Loving, enabling, self-absorbed, dysfunctional, incredibly strong woman. And she's, you know, I so salute the wonderful writers, Chuck Lorre and our amazing writers for writing this woman, creating this character who is, you know, of a certain age, which I am, and allowing this woman to be, you know, not the mother character who says, oh, darling, you know, now don't come in too late, put on your coat, you know, those boring mother stock characters. Instead, she's like giving her daughters sexual advice.
I love it.
That's Woozy Kurtz in conversation with Carol Marks. They're talking about her new book. It's a memoir. It's titled Part Swan, Part Goose, an uncommon memoir of womanhood, work, and family, published by Perigee Paperback, Penguin Random House. Excellent interview, interesting conversation. Carol Marks returns shortly in conversation with Alice Eve Cohen, a solo theater artist and playwright, who discuss her new memoir, The Year My Mother Came Back, published by Algonquin Books. That's coming up later in the program. I'm Michael Harrison, and you're plugged into a Tech Report. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a round table of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. And so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marks more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Grey, and I became involved with it along the way, is something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation. meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and this is the point in the program where we talk about the media. We're joined by our special correspondent, Kevin Casey, who is also the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, which is the publication that serves the industry of talk media, which includes talk radio and talk television. Kevin, I would imagine that the news talk programs on stations such as the one that this program is carried on are abuzz with the presidential 2016 election here in 2015.
Well, that's very true. It was a big week. You know, it's funny how the election season just grows and grows and grows and gets longer, but it seems like we're far away. We're a little less than a year away from the primary season. But, yeah, indeed, there were three major candidates who entered the race this week. Carly Fiorina, former CEO of Hewlett-Packard. Mike Huckabee entered the race, as did independent and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who will, you know, be on the sort of on the Democratic side. But that was big buzz this week as three new candidates entered.
Sort of on the Democratic side. That's an interesting way to say it. He is on the Democratic side.
Well, he is, but he's an independent.
I see what you're saying. He is going to be providing the Democrats with that kind of, I don't want to use the word radical or far, but let's just say left of center position that they claim Hillary doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary is, she's, what is, let me see, a dino. Did I just make up a term?
You might have.
You know, the rhinos and the dinos. Democrat in name only. A lot of the Democrats are complaining about Hillary the same way the Republicans are complaining about Jeb. Now, it'll be interesting if it turns out to be Hillary and Jeb. And, of course, this is like sports talk. We're trying to figure out who's going to win the Super Bowl, who's going to be in the Super Bowl during the exhibition season. But I kind of think that running for president, knowing full well that you're going to lose, is a business unto itself. I just wonder how many of these guys or gals actually believe they have a chance to win.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because earlier this week I learned that Bernie Sanders' brother, Larry Sanders, who
you're kidding, the guy that has the mythical television talk show?
Different guy. Larry Sanders is running for a member of parliament seat in England, where he's lived since 1969 or something like that, when he married a British national.
How interesting.
And he is also has this very similar policies to his brother, and he is running, and he admitted in a press statement that he didn't really think he had much of a chance, because it's the Green Party, and they only tend to get 2% of the vote in England. But he's raising issues, and I think that there are guys who feel that this is important to raise issues, even if they maybe in their own mind don't know that they have a, you know, don't really believe they have a chance to win.
Okay, that's one that's one reason to raise issues. Another reason is to raise money.
Well,
you know, you do when you start these committees, and I'm not an expert on campaign law. But I do know that when you start a committee, you can go out there and ask people for money, and then you can use that money in within certain limitations to buy food.
Sure. The reality note, if you talk to people who do run for elections and re-elections, et cetera, is they'll tell you that it's not the windfall people think it is. You've got a lot of expenses, too, and a lot of people who run find themselves in debt
after
they run.
Yes, and that is, those are the third kind that are actually believing they may win. Maybe when people hear me or see me, or, you know, get to know me, they'll want me to be president. Because you got to, you know, my feeling on this is that you got to have a little bit of a screw loose to go out and say, I think that I could run the world, and you should vote for me. I have the answers. I mean,
I'm not in disagreement with you at all. In fact, I think that anyone who has a family must certainly consider what they'd be putting their kids through running for election. And then if they win. If you win and you're president, your kids' lives will never be the same.
No, you are actually condemning them to a life of that path, you know, of having been in the first family. And,
yeah.
You know, you talk about child stars.
Mm.
I'm not saying that it necessarily worked out bad. I mean, Chelsea Clinton seems to have become quite a fine young woman. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if someday she runs for president. Wouldn't that be amazing if the first female president is Chelsea Clinton?
That would be amazing. Well, we're going to write this down, and in 10, 15, 20 years, if she runs, we'll get back to you, and you can say, aha!
See, I predicted it. a little whimsical speculation will become a prediction. But I think that we only have about 45 seconds. Carly Fiorina going into it definitely provides the Republicans with an interesting counterpoint to Hillary in terms of the Republicans versus the Democrats. Bernie Sanders provides counterpoint to Hillary in terms of inside the party's, decision-making process.
Yeah.
And the Republicans, well, that's just, that reminds me of the New York Marathon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, whoever's going to be, you know, sometimes in marathon, somebody runs real hard for the first 3 miles so that they could be in the lead on television.
Right.
And then they fall to the wayside. Kevin, we have plenty to talk about over the months to come on this subject alone. Thank you for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Kevin Casey. He is a senior correspondent on A Touch of Gray. He's also the vice president and executive editor of Talkers. If you'd like more information about Talkers, just want to visit it, it's talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. More Carol Marx conversations coming up next when A Touch of Gray continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. New guidelines from the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for persons 65 and older reveal that if women drink more than 7 drinks per week or greater than 3 drinks per occasion, and men 14 drinks per week or greater than 4 drinks per occasion, you're at risk for illness or injury. As the body ages, the tolerance to alcoholic beverages decreases. Literally, at 65 and older, you're unable to process alcoholic beverages as, say, a person that is 45. Alcoholic overuse and intolerance can worsen mental confusion, problems with balance and falls, depressive disorders, dehydration, inadequate nutrition, adverse interaction with some medications, and can lead to social isolation. One drink is 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of liquor, or the amount in a shot glass. Are you ready to acknowledge that at age 65 and older, that fewer than 7 drinks per week or 1 drink per day is the limit and offers you the advantages of leading a healthier and safer lifestyle? I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
When we ran out, we stopped using it.
Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished? We thought everything was fine, and that was not a good thing.
No.
He started stinking. It was awful.
Shedding comes back, loss of hair, lots of dandruff.
Scratching will return. His shedding will increase.
If I ever took Roy off of Dinovite, he would go back to his hair loss.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dinovite.
When I get to about 3/4.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order.
Dinovite.com.
Each and every day she is getting a Dinovite.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
Don't do what I did and run out.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Alice Eve Cohen. She's a solo theater artist and playwright, and will discuss her new memoir, The Year My Mother Came Back, published by Algonquin.
Your mother had been dead for 30 years, and suddenly in the memoir she appears at your kitchen table, and she's typing the keys on her old manual typewriter. And do you think that her ghost, or whatever you want to call what you experienced, came back in your life because you were thinking about her and you were really having the worst year of your life? And what was going on with your health that seemed to be really connected with what your mother had gone through?
Right. Well, at that time, and this was in the summer of 2008, I wasn't thinking about my own health. I was thinking about my daughter, who was 8 years old at the time, and she was facing a very difficult procedure to lengthen her shorter leg. And I was trying to fortify myself to be there for her as a dedicated mother throughout what was going to be a year-long medical ordeal that she was about to encounter. And so the last thing I was thinking about was my own health issues. And then I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Just as I was trying to summon up the strength to be there 200% for my daughter, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And the day I received the phone call from my doctor, I was sitting at my kitchen table, and I had a fantasy that seemed so real to me. It was like a vision of my mother sitting beside me at the kitchen table where she always used to type with her old typewriter that the old manual black typewriter that was always on our kitchen table. She was always working on her PhD dissertation, which she never finished. But there she was. She had died 30 years before. I had really stopped thinking about her because our relationship had been so complicated. I'd kind of put her out of my mind, and there she was. And I think, as you say, Carol, I think it was because it was such a difficult time and I needed her. Maybe the first time I allowed myself to need her in those 30 years, and there she was. And it was a profound fantasy, and I, at first, was frightened by it. I really didn't want her back. I was scared that it would complicate things and distract me. But as the year continued, I allowed the fantasies to become more present. I allowed myself to hear her voice. I allowed myself to have internal dialogues with her. And it helped me to remember even the complicated aspects of our relationship.
And certainly one of them occurred as a result of your mother's breast cancer, because
yes,
it changed.
When I was 12 years old, she had breast cancer. That all came back to me when I was diagnosed.
And that really made your mother change, and your whole relationship really deteriorated.
It was a tough time. I had a lovely relationship with my mom when I was a young child. She was a warm, loving, dedicated mother. Even though in those pre-feminist years, she was a feminist ahead of her time, but she was struggling in those frustrating times to juggle career with all of the responsibilities of being a mother and a wife and housekeeper. But when she had breast cancer, again, I was 12, I was in the cusp of puberty, it was very devastating to her. She was very sick. She had a double mastectomy, and I think that the changes to her body were very distressing to her and caused a deep depression. So for my whole adolescence, my mother seemed unrecognizable to me. She was distant. She was angry. She was unhappy. The mother I had grown up with was gone. So even though my mother didn't die, I felt that I had lost her. So in revisiting my relationship with her as an adult, for the first time, I was able to empathize with her and understand her. As a kid, I just felt abandoned. As a kid, I really didn't have the experience or perhaps the generosity to understand the sorrow that she was going through. I just felt like I'd lost her. As an adult, looking back, revisiting her, having these conversations with her, whether they were fantasies or something more mysterious than that, I really was able to approach my mother, my memories of her with greater empathy, with greater understanding.
No, I just loved that she really was, as you say in your book, she was of her time, but she was ahead of her time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love what your mother had said about women's status in marriage,
yeah,
that it hadn't changed since the Middle Ages.
That's right. Well, my mother was very brilliant, and she was an academic. She was a sociologist by profession and taught at several colleges. She was always an underpaid adjunct professor because she was having such a struggle to complete her PhD. But she was well-respected, and she was examining these questions of women's role in the workplace and women's role in marriage, both from her very personal point of view and as a sociologist. And she started delivering lectures very, very early in the feminist movement. She really was ahead of her time. In fact, if I could just share something with you, yesterday another interviewer asked me, what do your daughters think about your mother now that they've read your book? My daughters never met my mother, their grandmother. And so I asked my daughter Eliana, who is now 15 years old, and she said, and I'm quoting her, "She inspires me. I'm humbled by her work and dedication as an early feminist before that was accepted at all in American society. I wish I could meet her, my grandmother. I feel privileged even to be able to meet her in this way through this book. So,
isn't that wonderful?
I'm just delighted that even though my 15-year-old daughter never met her grandmother, today she can feel inspired by how her mother was a pioneer in the feminist movement in the early 70s.
That's Alice Eve Cohen in conversation with Carol Marx. Her book is titled The Year My Mother Came Back, published by Algonquin Books. And if you want more information, go to AliceEveCohen.com. Thank you, Carol Marx. I'm Michael Harrison. Steve Wiseman joins us next when A Touch of Grey continues.
Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with four legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. Our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed them very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000. 859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
For Touch of Grey in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is one of the nation's leading experts on scams and fraud and identity theft and, you know, cybersecurity and privacy. He's the author of books such as The Truth About Avoiding Scams and Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall. His website is titled Scamicide. You might want to check it out. Steve is here now to talk about obituary scams. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, scammers have no sympathy for anyone, as evidenced by the many scams that are based on obituaries. For years, scammers would scan the obituaries and go to Social Security's Death Master File, where the names of deceased Americans are available along with their social security numbers, and then use that information on the deceased in order to make them a victim of identity theft by obtaining credit, filing phony income tax returns, or other tactics. Easy access by scammers to the Death Master File has been largely closed by legislation that took a long time to be made effective. Scammers also will look for information in obituaries about the names of family members and then use that information for purposes of the infamous grandparent scam, where the grandparent gets a telephone call late at night from a scammer posing as the grandchild who, under the guise of some emergency, tricks the grandparent into sending money to the scammer. Another scam is scammers will call the families of people they see in obituaries and claim they're creditors of the deceased and that the family must pay a debt owed by the deceased. And then finally, scammers will also deliver packages by messengers or on a COD basis, claiming that the package was something ordered by the deceased. It's only after the family member has paid the cash on delivery charges and opened the package that the family finds the package is just filled with old newspapers or magazines merely used as weight. Scammers prey on people at their most vulnerable, so it's at the times like the death of a family member that you really have to be your most vigilant. When writing an obituary, don't put in specific information, such as names that could be used by a scammer of children or grandchildren. Also, contact the three major credit reporting bureaus, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, to seal the credit report of the deceased, in order to avoid the risk of identity theft. Because that way, even if someone gets the social security number and other information on the deceased, they're not going to be able to open credit. If someone contacts you claiming a debt that was owed by the deceased requires payment right now, demand written confirmation for you to review before paying any alleged debts. And don't be pressured. Don't be pressured to act quickly by a purported debt collector. Finally, if a COD package comes, refuse. Refuse to pay until you can confirm that the delivery is legitimate. You know, it's kind of a sad situation, but you have to recognize that these scammers truly have no sympathy, and the only place you're going to find that helping hand is at the end of your own arm.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman joins us every week here on Attention Gray. He's a senior correspondent on the show. He's also a prolific writer, a lawyer, an expert on scams and fraud, as well as many of the topics we talk about. He's written Identity Theft Alert and The Truth About Avoiding Scams, both published by Prentice Hall, and his website. Check it out. It's very, very valuable. It's scamicide.com. Steve Wiseman. I'm Michael Harrison, and I want to thank Beverly Santinello on the front line, our producer, putting it all together. Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine for sharing some insights about the media. And, of course, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and a champion in the battle against ageism. And remember, no matter how many years you have, you know, on your odometer, no matter how many times you've taken that voyage around the sun, it's never too late to follow your dreams, to follow your passions, and to really enjoy your life to its fullest. Never too late at all. So get cracking at it. I'm Michael Harrison. Thank you for joining us. Join us again next weekend right here on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.